There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, welcome in. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and this is All Ball. Man, you're going to love this All Ball series. We'll get to championship week, conference picks, all that other stuff. But this weekend is really a celebration of, I think, inarguably the greatest career in the history of college basketball coaching. Mike Krzyzewski is going to retire. This is his last regular season weekend. They play North Carolina at famed Cameron Indoor Stadium. So I was trying to figure out who's the best, the absolute best Duke guest to have. Because look, Duke is not only synonymous with college basketball, obviously synonymous with USA basketball. But I also think that there's so many guys to choose from, right? You have media personalities like Jay Billis, and there's a great Jay Billis pod if you want to go and search it in our archives. He's amazing. You got Jay Billis, who, of course, as a broadcaster, is the greatest Duke broadcaster, former player. There's Jay Williams, who is an unbelievable player and is a broadcaster as well, as former kind of broadcasting teammate of mine. You got J.J. Redick, who, of course, is kind of synonymous with a time period in for Duke. He's become an outstanding broadcaster, of an outstanding NBA career. There's Shane Battier. There's Grant Hill. There's Bobby Hurley. There's, like, you kind of go through it. And then there's coaches as well. I thought Steve Wojciechowski was the perfect guy because he's the only Polish point guard he ever had. He was kind of, he's synonymous with Duke, really, from style of play to leadership ability to coach on the floor to becoming an actual coach at 21 years old to being a part of those national championship teams, couple of them, to taking on his own program. And I've also kind of been following his journey in his year off. And we've gone back and forth about when to do it and how to do it, whatever. And he was more than gracious with his time. So what you're going to hear is 2 days of conversation, me and Wojo, and we kind of go through parts of his playing career, parts of his assistant coaching career, and parts of his Marquette career, and a lot of perspective on life. It's really good. So without further ado, here's part one of my conversation with famed starting point guard at Duke, former assistant coach at Duke, former head coach at Marquette, Steve Wojciechowski. Let's start here. Let's start. You're in high school, okay? Freshman year in high school. How good were you?
I was a good young high school player. So, I actually played on the JV team. I went to Cardinal Gibbons High School in Baltimore City. And it was, at that time, it was one of the better Catholic League basketball programs in the city. And I played primarily on JV. And then every once in a while, I got called up to varsity. But it wasn't like, if you saw me play as a freshman, you would have said, man, that kid's going to play at the highest level. My journey was a journey where every year I got a little bit better. And my freshman year, I was good, but not spectacular by any means.
When did you grow? And I know what happens with guys like us. They're like, well, you never do. Like, no, that's not really. When did you? Because I stayed back and I grew a ton. I grew from like 5 feet to 5'9" ish when I entered high school. When did, were you a slow progressive grower as well? Or did you have a spurt?
No, I grew incrementally. You know, there wasn't like one summer, like some guys you read, you know, he was 5'4" as a freshman and then he was 6'2" as a sophomore. That wasn't me. I kind of grew slowly and then stopped. Unfortunately, I wish I would have grown a little bit more.
So your dad, remind me, your dad worked at the docks, right? Is that right?
Yeah. So I'm actually recording this podcast in my childhood bedroom.
That's so cool.
Visiting my folks. So my dad was a longshoreman. Uh-huh. So basically, when the cargo ships came from all over the world into the port of Baltimore, he took care of it. He loaded it, unloaded it, worked on the rail yard, worked in the sugar house. He was a blue collar worker. It's funny too, because, you know, I got asked in my journey all the time, like, your dad was a coach, right? I was like, no, he was a longshoreman. I'm sure he wished he was a coach, but he was down at the docks at the Union Hall trying to get whatever work he could get to provide for our family.
It's amazing because, so my grandpa was, he was an accountant, but in order to put himself through school to become an accountant, him and a buddy bought a truck in New York. Right. And so he'd take night classes and then without going to sleep, they'd drive down to the docks in New York City. Right. And they would buy fish and then they would go deliver them to restaurants throughout the city and on to Long Island and whatever. And then he'd sleep all day and then he'd do it again. That's how and then he became a car dealer because as an accountant, you look at somebody's books and eventually he took over a car dealership. Right. But he couldn't understand my dad's infatuation with basketball. Right. He just, you know, he could, like, even in 81, my dad got fired at UWM. I don't know, it was fired. They went Division III from Division I, whatever. I mean, it wasn't a good deal. And my dad was trying to get him to buy the New Jersey Nets for $1 million, trying to get him to buy it. And he looked at their books and like, this is a crap business. No, thank you. Why don't you just run my... Once you just run a car dealership, I want to retire. And my dad was like, I want to be a basketball coach. So I asked you that because your dad's a longshoreman. He's putting in a hard day's work every single day, right? And you have this, I'm sure at some point you have this dream of playing basketball. What was he like in terms of your journey? And was there this is crazy, you know, you're my son, you're not going to be big enough, you're not going to be tall. Like, what was he like in terms of your belief in self? And how much he kind of bought into that belief.
Yeah, he was great. You know, my dad was a really good athlete in high school. You know, but coming from a Polish family in Southwest Baltimore City, you know, like, and his father was a longshoreman. That's kind of what you did. Like, you went to high school, you finished high school, and then you went to the docks to work and provide for your family. And so that was like, that's what he knew. And, you know, again, I think he was very supportive and he worked incredibly hard to provide for my brother and my sister and I so we could live a life that he didn't have a chance to live. You know, I joke all the time, my dad loved weekends and holidays, not because it was time off, it's because he could get paid time and a half, or he could work on holidays and get two times the pay. But he was really supportive. And he set a great example of work. And I think that was probably, and it didn't necessarily come from lectures. It came from watching him. I mean, I've not met anyone who worked harder than my dad. And he did it with the goal in mind to provide security and safety and opportunity for his kids. And so I believe, as he saw me work, especially on the game of basketball, he wanted to encourage that passion and that work ethic. And he would always tell me, like, you know, you're good, but you need to go there and play and see how good you are. Or, if you're not working, somebody else is. And those lessons, even though they, again, they didn't come in the form of like, let's go to the, you know, get out there and work, man. Like, I know, you know, you have a bad game, you're upset, like, get back out there and do it again. Like, nobody's going to feel sorry for you. Like, you put your boots on and get to work. And those lessons were invaluable to me. So I never really feared failing because I knew, you know, like, as long as I was giving my all and giving the best effort and pursuing something that I loved, there was no failure, regardless of where it took me. Now, fortunately, it took me a lot of great places, but there was no guarantee of that.
So what is a summer between your freshman and sophomore year? Because so I did the JV and varsity thing as well, right? And I remember first time I dunked was that summer. It was at maybe spring afterwards. We had like a spring league game or whatever. We were like in warmups and I went up and dunked. And you remember becoming the varsity point guard of sophomores. Is that what had happened for you?
Yeah. So I ended up playing on the varsity as a sophomore. And we were the rest of the guys who started and played a lot were primarily upperclassmen. And we had a really good, we won the Baltimore Catholic League. There was a number of other college players on the team at the time. And here I was, this, you know, little white sophomore point guard trying to find his way on a good team and a heck of a league. But again, it wasn't like I was all conference. I was a really good sophomore player. And in the Baltimore area, I think for my age, I was recognized as one of the best, but certainly not the best. So there was always a carrot out there for me in high school, which I'm glad there was.
When did it take off? Because the first time I ever saw you play was at ABCD. And you and I have talked about this before, but you played on a team that was like everyone else played on a team from their region, right? that year. It was in Ypsilanti, Michigan, right? Is that Eastern Michigan University? So you're going to be a senior. I was going to be a junior. And you had a team. You had like two other Americans, one kid from Indiana, I believe.
Yeah, Ryan Hanley.
Ryan Hanley, right? And then who was he? Was that the only other American? Was there
no,
was
there one no, more? There was another. There's another American player from the Dakotas, and his name escapes me. But okay. the rest of them
were all foreigners, right? And then you had a translator on the bench.
Yes, we did. I mean, it was an incredible experience. And you know, you asked kind of when it clicked. Really, it was after my junior year. You know, my junior year, I had established myself as one of the better players in the city of Baltimore. And after my junior year ended, my high school coach was a huge five-star guy, Colonel Ray Mollis. And so I must have gone to 12 five-star camps. But after my junior year, I went to June Honesdale, and June Honesdale was one of the better of the weeks of five-star. And so at that camp, Stephon Marbury, Vince Carter, most of the best players from the Eastern Seaboard. And again, at that point, my recruitment was mid to low major. And in fact, really, as I looked forward, I anticipated choosing between the University of Pennsylvania with Fran Dunphy and Princeton with Pete Carril. And I tell you what, the kid from Baltimore, son of a longshoreman, I mean, you end up at either one of those places, it's like a dream come true.
Well, for people like, let's jog people's memory, that those Penn teams right there, then you had Maloney and Jerome Allen, right? You had Matt Maloney, pro, Jerome Allen, pro. So I think what happens now is if you look at it through 2022, you're like, yeah, Penn, Princeton was good back then. No, you don't understand. I don't know if you would like, I think that when Maloney and Allen, I had never watched Penn play before. And I remember my dad, like, you need to watch these kids play. Cause Maloney's dad was a coach. And I was like, yeah. They're bad boys. So
man, they were ballers, man.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, today's day and age, those teams would be top 25 teams.
So is Baltimore a Virginia town or a Maryland town or a Georgetown town? Like what is like most guys who grew up in Baltimore, they envision themselves playing where?
Well, I grew up, the first team I loved was University of Maryland. And, you know, like most kids, when they're 8, 9, 10, their superheroes are from the Marvel comics, right? Like Superman, Spider-Man. My first hero was Len Bias. You know, I had Len Bias posters on the wall. And I can remember some of my first memories of watching college basketball were watching Len Bias play. I mean, one game in particular at the University of North Carolina, Warren, you know, he dunked it and Warren Martin took the ball out of bounds and tried to inbound it to Kenny Smith, I believe. And he stole it and reverse dunked on Warren Martin, who was a 7 foot, you know, 7 foot center. And I'm like, this can't be real. This guy is not. And so I love the University of Maryland. That's like the first team I love. And so Baltimore, I think, is definitely a terrapin town. There's no question. And there's been some over the years, there's been some discord between Baltimore and Maryland. But, you know, I think most of the people in the area I grew up were Terps.
It's interesting. Like, you know, you talk about the lessons you learned from your dad, the lessons we learned from basketball. Like, I remember when Len Bias died, I remember that was my don't do drugs. Right.
Right.
Like I didn't need Nancy Reagan. I didn't need anything else. I was told Len Bias used cocaine and died. That was like, okay, I'm never using cocaine because Len Bias is like a superhero. And you know, that was my memory. That's how wired into sports and basketball I was. Okay. So now your junior year, it starts to click at five star.
So I go to five star. Yeah. And probably have the best week of basketball in my young life. And I end up getting most outstanding player at the camp. And you got to remember, like, Vince Carter is pretty damn good. Stephon Marbury, although, you know, people don't remember him, but at that time, you know, he was incredible. And a lot of other really good players. So that was a surprise, I think. I think I was surprised at that. But I think that woke people up a little bit, like, all right, maybe Penn and Princeton aren't like the ceiling for this guy. And Howard Garfinkel, who I was incredibly close with at that time, after the camp called Sonny Vaccaro and basically called in a favor. So I got this kid, just won most outstanding, because I wasn't invited to the camp. And so Garf called in a favor to Sonny and said, you probably need this kid at your camp. And so fast forward, I get invited to the camp. And I remember arriving at the camp, and everybody already knew what team they were on. Team California, Team New York, you know, Team, you know, Florida, wherever. And I didn't. And so, like, as I'm going through this, I'm like, something's missing. There isn't a Team Baltimore. And that was actually my first time I've ever been on a plane, was the flight to Ypsilanti, Michigan.
What?
Yeah. First time I was ever on a plane. To fly to Ypsilanti, Michigan. I go there. Like, I'm seemingly what it feels like me. I'm the only one who doesn't know what team they're on. So I go up to Sonny and I introduce myself to Mr. Vaccaro. I'm Steve Wojciechowski. I know you talked to Howard Garfinkel about me participating in the camp. I don't have a team, but I really love to play in the camp. And so, you know, Sonny's moving a million different directions and he's like, all right. And he passes me along to Gary DeCesar, and I get put with my team. So as I'm walking over to my team, I'm looking at my team like, my team does not look like the other teams. it does not look like Team California. And so as I go up and I'm sitting there, I'm going, okay, there's Brian Hanley, and this is the dude from South Dakota, me, and like eight other white guys who, like, are not speaking English, and I'm trying to put it all together because things are happening fast. I mean, right. 3 weeks ago I was in Honesdale, Pennsylvania, sleeping in a fort with a bunch of dudes from New York City, you know, as a camper worker, you know, filling up Gatorade or Kool-Aid cups for the campers. And so they introduced me. It's like, it's the international team. I'm on the international team. And none of the international players, most of whom were from Eastern Europe, Russia, Eastern Europe, spoke English. And I'm sitting there going, wow, this is going to be interesting. And, you know, for me, in hindsight, Doug, it probably couldn't have worked out better. You know,
I totally agree. They played way better. Basketball conducive to how you played. Otherwise, it would have been on some other teams, the wrong team. I mean, like, look, for me, I was lucky. Sonny let my dad have my dad coach the team. Because at that point in time, like, it would have been break the press, throw it up, and somebody else go one-on-one. And he demanded that we run a little structure, right? But yeah, it did. It was actually like we used to come over and watch, like, dude, they play good basketball.
Right. So Coach Wagner, Coach St. John's in DC, was my coach. And because of the structure of our team and the international game, sharing the ball and the ball moves and working together, and allowed me to run a team, to run an organized team, as opposed to, like, in order for me to stand out, like, I gotta go show myself one-on-one, which would not have been a good thing for me. And so we played really good basketball, even though I didn't speak, you know, Russian or Czechoslovakian or Polish. Like, I was able to lead, and I found great comfort in my teammates. And I think my teammates were comforted by me because I played similar to what they were accustomed to. And we won a lot of games.
Yes.
You know, the first game we played Team New York with Kareem Reed and guys like that. I mean, really good, really good. And we beat them. And people were like, what is going on here? And so, again, circumstance, like, if you would have drawn up prior to me getting on the plane and said, this is what you're walking into, I would have said, there's no way. But living it out, it was the best thing that happened to me. So I went from being recruited in the span of less than a month from mid-majors, Penn, Princeton, to Duke, Carolina, et cetera, et cetera. And my life changed, like, really in the blink of an eye. And it came so fast, it was almost hard to believe. But it was incredible.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey guys, this is Matt Jones, Drew Franklin from the Fade This podcast. We got a great episode coming up, picks in all the sports, football, basketball, we do them all. But here's a preview of this week's episode. Do you think it's more embarrassing to dye your hair or to have hair plugs?
I don't think either are embarrassing if you're not trying to conceal it and act like you didn't.
Okay, so you think if you just come out and go, I got hair plugs.
Yeah, like, check out these hair. I mean, don't just walk around, hey, tapping, hey, stranger, I don't want you thinking this is natural. You know, but I mean,
do you have to do that with everyone you meet?
Some people try to act like they, you know what I mean.
Yeah, but I mean, like John Cena got him. You know, when John Cena came back to wrestling, he had a bald spot, and now he doesn't. Mm-hmm. You think he should be required in all interviews to say, look, by the way, I covered up my bald spot?
Yeah, I guess it's weird. I mean, you don't wear a sign or like put a sign in your yard, but.
All right. So what about toupees?
Those are the most obvious.
But let's say you're like Bill Self and you can get it to where it looks good.
His is magical. I don't even know if his is a toupee.
It is.
I think he went into the future and had a procedure we haven't even discovered yet.
And this episode was brought to you in partnership with DraftKings. To hear more, listen and subscribe to Fade This on iHeartRadio or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Okay. So the first time you speak with Coach K or one of the assistants, how did, because my memory is you'd get home from camp and suddenly now you'd either have to return calls or the phone would be ringing. But, and for you, again, it goes from one level to a much higher level. When was the first contact with Duke like?
Well, when I got back, you know, again, and this was the landline period, right? Like you had the phone on the wall. You didn't have cell phones. So there wasn't a lot of different avenues to get to people. So the phone's ringing off the hook. Because again, I went from like a regional recruit, a good player that if you were from the Mid-Atlantic, you probably knew my name, thought I was good, but that was the extent of it to nationally. So like every type of school is calling. You know, it's funny, when I got home, like things went back to normal, like mowing the grass, doing my chores. So, you know, like a couple coaches was like, he's going to have to call you back. He's mowing the yard. So when I talked to them, they're like, your parents make you mow the yard. I'm like, yeah, that's just the beginning of it, buddy. And don't like come across to them that that's a bad thing, because that's the last time, you know, you will.
So what were your chores? I've always throughout my life been the garbage guy. We didn't have in California, we didn't have enough grass to be out. Everybody has a gardener or whatever, but I was garbage guy. We had like one night a week. We had three kids. So one night a week I had dishes. I'm trying to think. My dad had to make your bed before he left the house rule.
Right.
And I'm trying to think what my other chore was. I had to pick up dog poops. I had to pick up the dog poops. And at that point in time, I was my brother and sister were in college or out of college or whatever. And so I was the only one picking up the dog poops because it was basically my dog. What was yours? You had mowing the grass, anything else?
Mowing the grass, you know, and for my family, it was like there wasn't an allowance. Like if you wanted money, you had to earn it. And so I had to mow our yard, but then I mowed, you know, four or five other yards in the neighborhood to make money, you know, whether it was gas money or whatever. So like I was pushing a mower or, you know, riding a mower quite often. And it was great. It was like my first job, and I learned a lot from it. So, you know, again, my mom did a ton around the house. She definitely spoiled us. So it wasn't like, you know, a ton of chores, but the mowing the grass, I had to carve out a number of hours to do that with all the lawns I mowed.
Okay, so who'd you speak to first? Was it Coach K? Was it Pete Godette? Who was it?
Yeah, it was. I spoke to Coach K first, and that was surreal. Because, you know, I mentioned earlier, Maryland was like, and Len Bias in particular, was like my first love. But shortly after that, it transitioned to Duke. You know, I would imagine Bobby Hurley.
Was it Coach K's Polish, or was it Bobby Hurley and those teams? Like, or I mean, I guess maybe the whole thing. Like for me, it was Bobby Hurley was white point guard, looked like me, coach's son, right? Tougher than hell. And I love those Duke teams, like loved. Yeah. What was it for you? Yeah.
Well, I love Bobby. You know, yeah. I love watching Bobby play. But it was the whole thing, too. I mean, Bobby, that team, and the fact that Coach was Polish. I mean, I can remember, you know, going, you know, different events in my dad's side of the family, a proud Polish family. It's like, look at that. You know, like there is Polish guys can make it in basketball. Look at that guy from Duke. And I can remember that when I was like 9 or 10. Like, yeah, if you like basketball, there's a guy who coaches Duke who's Polish too. It was like the one guy that people would point to. So it was all of that. And by that time he was an icon, right? I mean, there was seven out of nine Final Fours, was the back-to-back championships. It was not only the fact they won championships, but how they did it. It was all of those things. And you got to remember, 6 months earlier, the phone wasn't ringing off the hook. You know, it was, you know, I would get letters and there'd be occasional calls, but it wasn't at all like the barrage I got post ABCD camp. And then, so it was hard for me, you know, I think looking back at it to even think like, holy, you got a chance to go to Duke. Like, you're talking to Coach K, you're talking to Dean Smith, you're talking to Rick Pitino, like, what is going on here? You know, I was, this is, you know, 6 weeks earlier, I was by myself, you know, shooting hoops in the driveway, playing Beat the Pro, dreaming about like outplaying Kareem Reed, you know, and then it's.
Wait. So you have a hoop in your driveway?
Yeah. So driveway, neighbor's driveway and in the backyard. No cement.
Neighbor's driveway is big. Okay. So my driveway, my parents' house was like on a slant. So, and this is before, you know, when I was in high school, they got me one of those ones that rolled out and I could put on the curb so I could shoot in the street. But growing up, I had to go like six houses down. My brother's buddy, this guy named Garrett Phipps, and Greg liked going down there, not to shoot hoops, but because Garrett's dad had Takate girl picture posters in his garage. So right. Like barely dressed. So they would go in there and they'd be checking out, drinking a Coke and check out, and I'm shooting outside. And I was a little annoying brother, so they closed the garage door. But that was great for me. So I would play imaginary games. It was a flat driveway. I would shoot hoops, but I would also be Brett Musburger or be Howard Cosell and announcing the games. And I would play the imaginary game. So what was Beat the Pro? Is that a setup game that you had, or is that just in your mind you made up a game?
No, so essentially it's like, You choose who you're playing against, pro, you know, high school, you know, whoever Hoop Scoop ranked the number one player in the country I play against, right? Clark Francis. And then, you know, like for every shot you make, you get a point. For every shot you miss, whoever you're playing gets 3 points. And so you basically decide the number you're playing and playing to 21.
You didn't go one on cone. You didn't do cone drills and one hand layups. And
yeah. No. And this is the thing that, you know, again, and those people are well-intentioned and, you know, you always kind of need a hook to get people excited. The thing I love the most about basketball, one of the things was the use of my imagination.
Yeah.
Like the games I dreamed up in my head and the things I did in my head were, it was incredibly powerful, I think, for a young kid, you know, a lot of, you know, whether it's, kids can use Legos or other toys, or for me, it was basketball. Like the things I would dream were incredible. And the fact that some of those dreams came true is mind boggling to me.
That's an amazing way to have that perspective. Okay. So what's Coach K like? Like you first start talking to him. What's he like?
One, I think, you know, first of all, he came across as a normal human being that had done extraordinary things. A great sense of humor. You know, obviously he played on the Polish thing quite a bit. So we had, I think, common background bonds. But I was in awe. It was hard for me, especially at the start, to like think of him as a normal human being, because this guy that you watch on TV do incredible things with incredible people and players. I remember being pretty quiet and just listening, and I could listen to him talk for hours, even though we weren't necessarily on the phone for hours.
Did you ask if he was offering you a scholarship? Did he like, you know, because sometimes there's the dip in the toe in the water call and you're on their list and they just want to kind of hold you there. Sometimes it's the, we want you. So you start talking to him and it's kind of deity sort of status. Did he offer you a scholarship? Did you ask? Was it not right away? How did it take
place? It was right away. And Coach Bray tells a great story. You know, as they were watching me at ABCD camp, there was debate, right? Like, I really like the way he plays. I like the things he brings to the table, but like, he's small. He's not particularly fast or quick. He's not really a great shooter, although he can make shots. Like, is he good enough? And so I think they had that debate, which was a logical debate. And I think Coach Bray tells the story as they were walking to the car and he says, look, Coach, if he can lead a bunch of effing Russians, he can lead our team too. And so the scholarship came shortly thereafter, the ABCD camp. And so, it was all in. There was, you know, again, like I said, it happened quick. It went from some really good opportunities to like opportunities where I'm like, whoa, this is for real.
Did you take a visit? Did you take all your visits? How'd that work?
So I remember having a meeting with my high school coaches and my family. And basically, because my recruitment changed, I had scholarship offers from like the whole spectrum of schools. And my high school coach is like, you need to narrow this down. But I felt loyalty to some of these schools that had recruited me for a long time. And, you know, even mid-major schools and schools that sent me the first letter and all that stuff that kids go through, right? Like, I feel loyalty to them. And so, you know, we had a big list and we got it down to like 12 schools. And finally, my high school coach was like, look, it's nice what you're doing and I understand what you're doing. Like, but you got to make a decision. Like, do you want to go for it? Meaning like, you need to commit and say like, I believe I can play and be a good player at this level. Instead of having the Dukes of North Carolina, the Penn Princetons, and the Towson State on the school because they were the first to the party. And so that night I committed to like, I'm going to go for it. With more conversation, my final five schools were Duke, North Carolina, Wake Forest, Vanderbilt, and St. John's.
Okay.
And St. John's was a little bit of a favorite of Garth.
Was Tariq Turner before you or your
no, he's year? The same. Tariq's my year.
So here's what's interesting about Tariq Turner. He was my AU teammate up until I think eighth grade. He moved to Virginia.
Yeah.
So like, I remember like our first Big East win at Notre Dame was against St. John's. And here I am guarding a guy that I literally grew up playing in the same backcourt with, right? And it was nuts. So did you take all five visits or how'd you do it?
So I visited Wake Forest first, and Dave Odom and Jerry Wainwright was the assistant. And Jerry was a big five-star guy and Coach Odom was a big five-star guy as well. So I knew those guys well, because I, you know, at that time, like I saw them all the time, because I essentially my summers, I lived at five-star. So I was very comfortable with them and the great people, great coach. So I visited Wake Forest first and story I'll never forget, their freshman class, a year ahead of me was Maktar Njai, Ricky Peral, and Tim Duncan. And, you know, this was preseason. So, you know, you didn't get the early matriculation where the freshmen came in the summers and coaches could work a lot in the preseason with teams. You were still bound by NCAA rules, which was at that time, very, very limited. So, you know, the pickup games you'd hear and coach was like, you know, we have a great freshman class. Like Maktar could play anywhere. We beat, you know, whoever they beat to get him. Ricky Peral was a stretch four from Spain who was highly touted European player. And they said, you know, the third guy, we're probably going to end up redshirting him, but he may end up being the best of all three. And it was Tim Duncan. And I remember going to meet him in his dorm room and he was sitting Indian style, you know, with the Rastafarian shirt on playing the guitar. And I'm like, this guy's going to be the best of the three. But damned if he wasn't.
What was your Duke visit like?
It was great. Again, it was awesome. That was my second visit. So Wake Forest and then Duke, and they were back to back. It was great. Chris Collins was my host. Still one of my best friends to this day. You know, and the Duke campus is spectacular. I mean, it's gotten any better since I went to school, but it doesn't feel real. And Regal, then you walk into
Regal a word or because here's okay. So I had never been there until I was there a couple weeks ago, and I remember walking, and there was a little bit of Notre Dame to it, in that there's a city, and then it feels like separate, sort of from the city. It feels a little bit more spread out than Notre Dame, and a little different setup. There's not the two lakes like Notre Dame, but it is. It feels like you're going to a special place. Like I always thought when I was at Notre Dame, I was going to school in a museum. Right.
Right. Right. Right.
I'm like, I don't want to break anything. It feels like a museum. Now at Duke, Notre Dame's kind of like this now, where there's some of these really beautiful glass buildings where they kept some of the architecture and then some of the more modern stuff. But generally, it all is kind of same architecture, all that stone exterior stuff. But again, like you're coming from Baltimore, but you've been to Wake. And I don't know how many other college campuses you've been to, but it is different and unique from other places. So, like, help me with what it's actually like, right? Like, is Regal? I don't know if Regal or
that's a great word for it. I mean, I felt like when I was there, I was like, this place is elite. You know, and again, I went to school in the city, and I didn't have a lot of. It wasn't like my family. We grew up touring college campuses. We just didn't do that. I mean, my brother and sister and I were going to college. My sister went to Loyola in Baltimore, which is an urban campus. My brother went to James Madison in Virginia. That's kind of what I knew. It wasn't like I had been on a lot of college campuses. But when I got there, I'm like, this place is different. I could go to a lot of places. My suspicion is there aren't many places like this. So I felt like it was elite. And then, you know, you're a high school senior, and, you know, Grant Hill and Tony Lang and Cherokee Park, all these guys you watch just win national championships are there, and you walk into Cameron and it's unique, and you've seen it on TV, you've seen the Cameron craze, but you walk in there and this place is just different. And obviously Coach was one of a kind as well. So I knew when I was there on the visit, it's not going to get better than this. Like this is where I'm going. And you know, again, you have all these plans going into this. You do not commit on your visits. You take all your visits, all that stuff that sounds wonderful in theory, but you know, like eventually you got to follow your own heart. So visited, had a great visit. I went to church with Coach K on Sunday morning and went to the airport and flew out, and remember getting home and basically tell him like that's where I want to go to school. And I was supposed to visit North Carolina the next weekend. Tell my coaches, and my coaches really wanted me to visit. They, you know, like, are you sure this? Like, but you've committed, and I'm like, you've committed to taking visits. I'm like, yeah, but I don't want to waste any more time. Like, I know where I want to go. Like, why would I do something when I already have arrived at a decision? Like, that doesn't. Even as a 17-year-old, like that doesn't make a ton of sense to me. So I committed. I called and committed. And
All right. So that's it for part one. Okay. Stay tuned for part two. It gets really, really, really good, including wait till you hear how and when he was offered to be an assistant coach at Duke. You're not going to believe it. In the meantime, remember to download, subscribe, rate, review, send it to a buddy. This is great stuff. This is the kind of thing I know so many of you are assistant coaches or basketball guys, and you're driving to a game, you're driving to a tournament, you're driving to see a kid play. Maybe you're driving to see Duke play. You're driving to Cameron, and send it to a friend. because that's what it's meant for. Pay it forward. You learn about stories about life and people, and spoken word is so easy to ingest. A reminder, the Doug Gottlieb Show is daily, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app. Man, my thanks to Steve Wojciechowski. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and this is All Ball.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.